Welcome to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBR 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer, healthier lives. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at QNRReport.com. In the second segment, Todd Van Dyke will be speaking with John Heisler about his new book entitled Hancock. But for now, my guest in this segment is Mary Niemela from the Barbara Kettle Gunlock Shelter Home, here to talk about something that's been in the news a lot, and that's domestic violence. Thank you very much, Mary, for joining me.
Well, thanks for having us again. This is a great opportunity to talk about our upcoming month of October's Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and there's been a lot in the news lately, and not just about the events coming up, but there's been a lot of news, too, as well.
And, I mean, I could just give some people some statistics just to show people how huge of an issue this is, that it's not being blown out of proportion. This is definitely something really huge. One in every four women will experience domestic violence in her lifetime. An estimated 1.3 million women are victims of physical assault by an intimate partner each year, and then 85% of domestic violence victims are women. And another one that really concerned me was 70% of domestic violence incidents are not even reported. So, Mary, I wanted to ask you to start off with, what is classified as domestic violence?
Well, domestic violence in our world, so to speak, is that the power and control that one person has over the other person. It's not as how badly they can be beaten up or how many black eyes and bruises that they have, but it's the power and control that one person has over the other person. In the eyes of the court, it's what a police officer looks for is any fact that fair average mind person would believe that a crime has been committed, and domestic violence is definitely a crime.
And obviously, this isn't something that just happened. It's not a series of events that just happened to pop up. This has been going on for a very long time. Give us a little bit of background history to when there was a peak in the need to make domestic violence, in the need to create domestic violence awareness.
Well, our shelter is one of the first five shelters in the state of Michigan, and we've been in operation since about 1979. As far as it beginning in a woman's home in Laurium, where she was taking in people who were being, you know, battered and abused by their loved one, and then in 1980, the state of Michigan stepped in, which were funded in part by the Domestic Violence and Sexual the Domestic Sexual Violence Treatment and Prevention Board. So from now on, I'll call it the DVP. Now, see, I don't even get those initials right. The DV Board, we'll call it that.
Okay.
And they stepped in and said that they would asked if we would want to be funded by them in part, and so we did that. And then in 1983, Herman Gunlock donated the building that we're in memory of his wife, and she was an activist in women's issues, and she had passed away that year, and so that's where we are at, and that's a great thing that he did for us.
What kind of services do you provide for the people who come into the shelter home?
We're a shelter for victims of domestic violence and their children. We're a temporary shelter. We provide safety and shelter, and you know, we have food, clothing, anything if anybody just needed to come. We have a full-time counselor that we'll meet. We have support groups that we offer on Thursday nights, and we're considering also offering one on Tuesday afternoon, and that hopefully will be starting in October. And we're there to listen and support the person in their decisions, and it's actually their decisions, not ours. We don't tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people can come and leave when they want. Sometimes women will come in and just talk to us. We might be the first ones that will be listening to them and believing what they're saying, and then it doesn't seem so bad, and they may go back into that situation. But they've been educated a little bit and empowered on their own just to be able to tell their story and have somebody believe them.
From the people that you've seen and the work that you have done, I mentioned that number, 70% of these incidents go unreported. What do you think is behind that number being so staggering?
Well, I think it's something that, you know, a woman, I'm going to say that as a woman, and I'll give that statistic that you said 85% from the National Coalition, and we've always been said it was 95% of victims are women, but, you know, I'm sure it's closer to in the middle of that. And they don't want to talk about it. It's just not something that they want to believe that's even happened themselves, especially the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't start out, you know, with a beating right away. It's very subtle. I mean, because we said before, domestic violence is the power and control. And, you know, there's just those little things that are happening and the controlling issues and the isolation and the intimidation and all those things you see on the power and control wheel if you ever get the opportunity to look at one. And you just really can't believe it's happening yourselves. And then you're in love with somebody. And, you know, we get asked all the time, why do women stay in that situation? What we should be asking is, why does he still abuse?
Mm-hmm.
As a society, we should be looking at holding the batterer accountable and not try to make the victim make it stop, because she can't. And so we just encourage people who are in that situation to call. I mean, they don't need to even say who they are if they just want to get some information, and to call the shelter. And that's, you know, 337-5623 is our crisis line. And just talk to somebody if they're in that situation.
Does it seem like more of these victims come from families, or is it mostly unmarried couples? Like, what's
no.
is there any differentiation?
No, I mean, no. I you know, once you're in a relationship, whether it's marriage or, I mean, years ago it used to be called spousal abuse because it only happened, they thought, between husbands and wives and behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that certainly has changed. And, you know, I don't know the statistics of people who are married to the people who are, you know, been dating for an awful long time or whatever, but it happens to everybody. Abusers don't wear name tags, and you know, if they did, we wouldn't be sitting here talking.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest, Mary Niemela. Let's talk a little bit about the impact that these incidents have on the family. What are some of the immediate impacts that happen?
Well, you know, when two people get married, they don't think, or she doesn't think, well, where am I going to, you know, keep something safe in case he abuses me? So, you know, or money or whatever, those types of things. And so there's a love that's there for each other. And, you know, some people, if they've grown up in that situation, they look at that as, that's the way that I'm to be loved. And abusers grow up thinking that's the way I'm to treat my wife. And if that pattern is never stopped or talked about, then it just continues. And so it affects everything within the family. The children, you know, statistics say 90% of children who grow up in violent homes are aware of the
Yep.
abuse. But personally, I think it's 100%, because even if they're not being physically abused, they certainly can see it and sense it you know, and they feel it. And then they grow up learning that that's okay to be that way. Domestic violence is definitely a learned behavior. So it very rarely is a mental illness where there's medication that can stop that behavior. And we have to remember that, you know, victims love their partner. It's the behavior that they don't love. And it's also the abuser's belief system that he can behave that way. And until he decides that that's going to be something he wants to change for himself, it's going to continue. If he changes for her or for the kids, or, you know, it's just not going to work. And children have the right to love their father. And abusers can be very good dads. Who they're trying to control is their partner, their wife. You know, they don't beat up their boss because they got scolded at work, or they don't beat up the law enforcement officer who stopped and gave him a ticket for speeding. What they're going to do is take that aggression home and take it out on the person that they can, which is their partner.
And lots of studies have been done on the impact that seeing domestic violence in the house, that it has on the kids. almost, I don't want to say specifically, but more towards the boys in the family.
Well, we have a statistic that says 60% of boys who grew up in violent homes may become batters, and 50% of girls who grew up in violent homes may become victims. And I think that, you know, that statistic is a way for a boy to grow up thinking that's the way he treats girls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're the bullies on the playground and that's not stopped, then they get into dating relationships. And if that's not stopped, then they end up in a marriage and it just keeps continuing because that's what they saw all their life. And I think one of the confusing things for children is if mom doesn't get out of the situation and stop that situation, then they think it's the norm, you know. And there's many reasons why women don't get out of that situation. Of course, love and fear are the two main reasons. Love that she loves him, and fear that she also fears him because of everything he said he's going to do to her if she attempts to leave.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest, Mary Nimala. And let's get into the Nima Nasiri case that just a couple days ago
Wednesday.
Came down. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Came down with the second-degree murder verdict. And I was there, and I saw you every day over there. And such an emotional case and so many different moving parts.
Mm-hmm.
What was your initial reaction?
Well, you know, I've been working at the shelter for 24 years, and I want to be shocked every day that this is still happening. And that certainly was the situation. Myself and our advocate were there, you know, throughout the whole trial. And it was very upsetting to see all that happen. And we're very happy that the second-degree murder charge came down and found guilty for that. I believe he was in control of the situation of what he was doing. And it's a terrible situation, and to have somebody that not have the family support up here, that, you know, mm-hmm. she didn't have that, and or neither one of them did, but I believe he totally knew what he was doing.
From the series of events that was made apparent to us mm-hmm. when we found out this happened, then after that this happened, do you feel like that this death could have been prevented?
Well, I think they can all be prevented if the abuser wouldn't abuse. But, you know, it's that's a tough question to say. I mean, we didn't know the history. They'd only been here a short time.
Mm-hmm.
If there had been any abuse in the past and it wasn't addressed, or he wasn't arrested for past abuse, then, you know, there's other people that need to be held accountable for that, too. But we don't know any of that. And they were together for only such a short time, from August to moving here in November and to her death in December. And so we don't know any of that. And, I mean, if there were things in his past that didn't get taken care of, or that got ignored or overlooked, then there was, you know, nothing that could do to be prevented except for his behavior.
Now we can jump to something that's hit the national stage, and me being a diehard, rabid NFL fan that I almost watch religiously, to see what was going down in the last 6 months or so, it's really bad. And I mean, again, there's a lot of statistics out of there with domestic mm-hmm. violence, and I pulled up one according to the analytics website 538.com. Domestic violence accounts for 48% of the NFL's violent crime arrests, compared to just 21% among average American males. So many people have classified it as an epidemic. And you have the more prominent Ray Rice incident.
That's right.
And just yesterday, or a few days ago, the Jonathan Dwyer of the Arizona Cardinals, and then you have Greg Hardy of the Carolina Panthers, Adrian Peterson,
mm-hmm.
One of the best players in the league, and now he's caught in a case involving his sons. And one that really caught my eye was the Ray McDonald case out in San Francisco, where he is out there playing.
Right.
And there's been a lot of flip-flopping. And even to mention, even in the past, some of the greatest players, the highly publicized O.J. Simpson trial, the Warren Moon, the quarterback, Jim Brown, it's just the league clearly has a history of this. Would you classify it as an epidemic?
Well, if they're abusive, they're abusers, whether they're a football player or your neighbor. If they're going to have that abusive behavior, they're going to continue to do it. I don't think if somebody has the belief system and behaviors that they're going to be abusive, it's not going to affect them that they're in the public eye so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that it's happening. And I'm glad that it's being talked about as much as it is. I mean, that's one of my goals and always has been, is to keep talking about it, whether it's Domestic Violence Awareness Month or whether there's a football player that's in the picture or a politician or whoever. We need to talk about it, even if it's your neighbor. And I think if we continue to do that, then it's going to be in the forefront for everybody, not just when it's something like this that hits the news. Our national coalition has been in touch with the NFL. They've been fully supportive of listening to all the women's groups that are out there, saying that this has to stop and it has to be addressed, and we certainly hope it does. And I think the focus needs to stay on the abusers, though, and
definitely
not so much on anything else. And the blaming of the victim. I mean, we know there's many reasons why, and we've talked about some of them today already. You know, love and fear and hope that they're going to change their ways because they've promised to do so. And so we really need to make sure that the batterer, whoever he is, gets held accountable for that behavior. And if he's allowed back, or any of those players are allowed back on the field to play, and their case hasn't been either prosecuted or dismissed yet, and then we're holding all the other people accountable for that. And if a case gets dismissed and we're still holding the other people accountable for that, then, you know, we're really condoning that abusive behavior because, you know, we're not holding every party accountable for that. And, you know, I think that they really need to focus on that. And if he is to be without a job, he's to be without a job. If that's what their policy is at their workplace, that the player shouldn't play, if that's a crime that they are let go for, then I think he needs to wait it out throughout the trial period.
And many people have criticized maybe the model that the NFL uses, just because the Ray Rice incident happened, and the NFL set up stringent punishments for those who get involved in domestic violence incidents. And yet the gentleman that I said, Ray McDonald, mm-hmm. of the 49ers, and Jonathan Dwyer of the Cardinals, a couple of weeks after, and it's almost like they brushed it off to the side. Do you think that there's something that's, I don't know, are they entitled, or is it just is the NFL model broken?
I can't say to that, because I don't know what they're doing behind the scenes. You know, I don't know how far the case is, if it's in court or if they're just in a waiting period. But I think if you and I did something wrong on our jobs, and if it was still pending, we wouldn't be allowed to go back there and work.
Definitely.
You know, and so they have to look at that as the same as, I mean, our jobs aren't maybe so much out in the public where people would miss us if we weren't there like they do a football player. So I really think they need to, you know, if it's to take them off the field, it's to take them off the field and hold them accountable for that. You know, I mean, we have a good collaboration with the football teams. The Green Bay Packers have paired up with Verizon a few years ago, and they collected cell phones and they picked shelters in the Upper Peninsula to support of that. And I believe it was 2 years in a row, the Green Bay Packers, who happens to be my favorite team, not just because of that donation, but just because. And, you know, they gave us money for those phones, and that was a really great thing that they did. And so, you know, I hope they're sincere in that donation and not just saying, well, we'll do that and that'll be a better thing, you know.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest, Mary Niemela. Let's talk about getting people help. Give us an idea of, if somebody is in a violent relationship, what can that person do?
Well, one of the things that we've learned over the years is that leaving is one of the most difficult and dangerous things for a victim to do. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't help her with a safety plan and, you know, to get her to a safe place, whether it be the shelter or her family or wherever she chooses to go. But if somebody needs help and they want to have some of those questions answered, they can call the shelter at 337-5623 is our crisis line. And it's also toll-free at 1-888-337-5623. And talk with us. And again, like I said in the beginning of the show, it can be an anonymous call if you're just trying to gather information, if you're coming to stay. Some people call ahead of time. Some people show up at the door. It's when they can leave. And that's one thing we have to remember. It's the victim's time to leave. She knows that best. I know many people have tried to help people and say, well, come on, pack your bags. I'll help you. I'll get you to the shelter. And that may happen, but if it's not her time to leave, and then she may go back into that situation. And statistically, it's about 5 to 6 times that somebody does leave. But we have to remember they do leave. We can't fault them for going back because, you know, they want that relationship to work. And they and many reasons they go back into that situation, not just love and fear, but children and a house. And housing is very difficult to get right now. Mm-hmm. And finances, they may not even work. Maybe he won't allow her to work, or he makes enough of an income where she doesn't have to work and she can stay home if there's children to take care of the children. And so there's many reasons. You know, children are a huge reason why women will stay in that situation, because might be a great dad to those kids, you know, and they love their dad, and so it's very difficult. And yet that is the biggest thing that's a drawing card for a woman to give up in things if they're trying to get a divorce. The children are used often as the pawn.
Now, there, like you mentioned, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and a week or so ago, there was the blueberry picking festival.
Yes.
How did that go?
It went really well. We're very appreciative to all the pickers that came out. They picked collectively 2,500 pounds of blueberries at $2 a pound. That's great. That's really wonderful.
That's a lot of picking.
We had one family that picked 125.3 quarter pounds of blueberries. That was a lot of fun to help them weigh that out. And then, you know, so that those proceeds were split between our shelter and the Berrigan County shelter. And that event was put on by the Gerke Blueberry Farm in memory of Sanaz and also Chelsea Lefernier from the Berrigan County.
And you have a couple of upcoming events?
Yes, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And as we said in the beginning, and we're doing something really different this year, we're having a motorcycle ride-in on Monday, October 6th at 6 o'clock. And there's no fee to ride in this, and so don't put your motorcycles away yet, people. We're not going to have snow yet, and put your gloves on and come on out. We're starting at 6 o'clock at the American in Calumet, and we're riding on U.S. 41 through Hancock and Houghton, and we're going to end at Chutes and Ladders. So there'll be a little brief ceremony at the beginning, like we always have. We light a candle, and we try to show our support in mourning victims, celebrating survivors, and reaffirming our struggle for a nonviolent future. And so I really want all you motorcycle people to come out and ride with us. And if you have any questions about that, you can call the business line at 337-5632 throughout the day and ask about that. But
just briefly, how did the idea for this event come up?
I was thinking one day, and that's what I came up with. And I've also been in touch with, you know, Jeff at the tattoo place and some other people. There's a Christian motorcycle group in one of the churches, and I believe they have 7 bikers. And so I'm hoping they're listening and they can get their motorcycles out.
And there's another event?
Yeah, we're having a conference on the 25th of September, which would be this coming Thursday.
Yep.
And It's Understanding the Mind of the Batterer by David Garvin. He's a co-founder for the Batterers Program in Lower Michigan. And it's free to those that are working agencies or even the community members if they want to learn more about that. And it's up at the Advanced Technology Development Complex. It's on MTU's campus up on Sharon Avenue across from the baseball field.
Excellent. Well, that'll wrap up this segment of Copper Country Today. I'd like to thank Mary Niemela for coming in to talk about a subject that it's hard for people to talk about, it's a good thing that there's information out there.
That's right.
And there's help out there.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer, healthier lives. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at QNRReport.com. We'll be right back with the second segment of Copper Country Today.